Good morning, everyone. We appreciate you being here. We are going to be joined by the other members of this committee as the time goes by. And for those that weren't here yesterday, I'd like to just repeat a couple of things. Please forgive the members of the committee that are not here. This is a very busy time in the Capitol where there's a lot of testimony going on in other committees. And the senators and representatives have bills that they need to testify on and that they need to follow. And there are many requirements beyond just what takes place within the committee. And nevertheless, we're going to proceed. And those that aren't able to be here, they can get a copy of the proceedings and watch it at night or on a rebroadcast. And so that they will stay up to get up to speed as to what's discussed here, even if they're not in attendance. This is the Wednesday, May 11, 2005 agenda. We're going to be having a public meeting on House Bill 5038, which relates to the budget for the Department of Human Services, Health Services. Today we're receiving public testimony. There is a requirement to, as far as time is concerned, and what we'd like to do is let you know that we can go between like 2 to 4 minutes, but brief is better. Piling on only hurts. If you have written materials, please give them to Mr. Britton, and he will see that they get distributed. If, as the course of the day goes on in this meeting, you find that what you were going to say has already been said, do not feel compelled to have to speak. If somebody doesn't come up, we'll just go right on down the list. On the other hand, if there's something you want to say, you know, that certainly we want to hear it. If you feel like you've been kind of cut off because of the time constraint, because there's so much more that you want to say, please feel free to supplement your testimony in writing, you know, through email or a letter, and you can give us what you didn't get to say here, but because of just the constraints that we have, this is about being able to come forward, give us a kind of a brief summary of what you want to have us remember, but we still are limited to this 2 to 4 minutes. So with that, we'd like to begin. Mr. Britton, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll invite three people at a time to come forward. You'll each get your period of time, and then I'll have others that are on deck so that we can have very little delay in the change between panels. I'd like to begin with Alan Levine, or Levine, and with... And by the way, the handwriting sometimes is difficult for me, so if I kill your name, it's not intentional. Looks like Laura, and I think it's S-I-S-U-L-A-K, and Jackie Mercer. On deck, we will have Lupita, you know who I mean. And then with you, if Al Nunez will also join us, and then Kevin Earls. Yes, sir.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alan Levine. I'm here today representing the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs. And in general, we oppose any and all reductions to the Oregon Health Plan, especially where it impacts A&D and mental health issues. Again, I'd like to briefly let you know where I'm coming from. I'm a member of this council that was created by the legislature. I'm also the chair of the local alcohol drug planning committee in my community, Clackamas County, and I'm part of the mental health council there. And I'm also a leader with the Recovery Association Project. I have a history of over 30 years of homelessness and addiction. I am, in fact, a double amputee. I lost my legs as a direct result of getting drunk, passing out under a bridge in the wintertime, frostbite, gangrene. And through that process, I was introduced to the health care system. Without the help of the Oregon Health Plan, without the help of the detox facilities and the treatment facilities I was able to access, I would have not been appointed by the governor to sit on that council or appointed by the county commissioners to sit on the LAPDC in my community. The Oregon Health Plan, there are tens of thousands of individuals right now who are not being served by the Oregon Health Plan because of the recent cuts. And the collateral damage that's being done, the emergency room visits, the crime that's being committed. People are seeking health care by going to jail, and that's an actual fact. We're hearing testimony in our communities about that. The meth crisis is upon us. These things are going to get worse. They're certainly not going to get better. I would just like to let you know that the Governor's Council would certainly welcome this committee, any of the committee members or any members of the legislature, actually, that would be willing to share with us at our meetings. We have regular scheduled meetings with any concerns that we might be able to help the council with.
Thank you. There was a case down in Southern Oregon where a guy got arrested and went into jail for a short period of time and needed major surgery, several $100,000, and which had to pay by the county. And the discussion after that was you could have a defendant who needed the medical care, and so he's going in to court, and his defense attorney is saying, Your Honor, he did the crime, he's got to do the time, and the prosecution knows about the health care. And he says, Your Honor, we need to be compassionate and lenient. Let this guy off. I could kind of switch things around. But anyway, it's a very real problem, and thank you for coming here. Ma'am.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Laura Sislak, and I'm the Director of Policy for the Oregon Primary Care Association, representing 23 federally qualified health centers in the state of Oregon. We serve one out of every five of Oregon's Medicaid and about one in eight of Oregon's uninsured. As you know, the OHP standard program will be down to about 24,000 enrollees by the end of summer, down from over 100,000 just 2 years ago. It's important to remember that these individuals have not disappeared. They continue to be seen in health centers and emergency rooms, as you suggested. The impact to health centers has been significant. We've had to lay off provider teams in some cases, cut staff benefits, limit hours of operations, and in the most extreme case, close a site. So we feel that it's important to remember that the cuts to the health plan threaten both services to folks on OHP and the other uninsured that health centers and other safety net providers are there to serve. Oregon's FQHCs have a deep concern about the future of the Oregon Health Plan, OHP patients, and the safety net that cares for our most vulnerable. The proposed budget that you're considering today adds to our concern by targeting more adults on the OHP Plus program. 900 individuals on the general assistance program, and for all adults enrolled in the PLUS program, the cuts proposed to dental and vision services are very concerning. These cuts are not minor to those who will experience them. Dental health services in particular are in high demand for Oregon's low-income population. And for example, our health center in Medford reports that dental pain is the second most common emergency room complaint in their local hospitals. That same clinic reports 8 dental emergencies seen daily walking into their site. And with added cuts, safety net dental services will become even less available. And as you know, 60% of Oregon's counties are identified as dental professional shortage areas. Secondly, we must express our strong concerns regarding the OHP standard program, although we recognize that it's not in your budget currently, as there are no general funds supporting the program. And we'd like to acknowledge the MCOs and hospitals who voluntarily agreed to tax themselves to keep those 24,000 Oregonians covered through the program. In so many cases, the standard population defines medical need, and they must remain a priority for the health plan and future investment of state dollars. Individuals qualified for standard are among the sickest of our uninsured, and we have several folks who are going to share some stories with you today. Many have complex medical needs and chronic conditions. Untreated, these individuals present in the emergency room with costly visits that could have been prevented. OPCA recognizes the tremendous financial constraints that the state is facing, and we've heard the clear message that a significant expansion of OHP is not viable in this biennium. However, we know that at the same time that the health plan is shrinking by thousands of Oregonians, that DHS has proposed increasing its investment by 71% in enrollment in the Family Health Insurance Program, or FEOP. And respectfully, we feel it's important to raise some questions about the focus of those resources. We're not opposed to the FEOP program and efforts to leverage employer health care contributions, but we're deeply concerned about the allocation of public resources, limited public resources, toward this program at a time of significant reductions to OHP standard and PLUS The program does not appear to be a good model for folks at very low income. There are significant cost-sharing, co-insurance deductibles, co-payments. And for those who, the type of folks who are falling off OHP standard, it's just a barrier that's far too big for them to overcome. Furthermore, the program's missed enrollment projections in the past and significantly despite a dedicated marketing effort. And so we have some concerns and questions about if there's been problems meeting that target enrollment, what will be done to address that in the future.
Okay.
Most importantly, the program will draw down a tremendous amount of Oregon's SCHIP allocation to cover adults, and there are many needy populations and feel like this is something that should continue to be looked at. So once again, I want to thank you for your time and urge you to place the highest priority on those individuals who are covered by the Oregon Health Plan to prevent further cuts to the OHP Plus.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's great to be back again and have an opportunity to speak to you and to advocate to you.
You need to identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Sorry. My name is Jackie Mercer. I'm the executive director of the Native American Rehabilitation Association, and I'm a member of the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. And I'm here today to speak to you about health care for Indian people. And I guess, you know, as I thought about talking this morning, I kept trying to figure out what I could say that would make a difference, and I still don't know what the answer to that is, but what I do know is that I am in a long line of Indian people who have come to the government asking for help for health care for Indian people for hundreds of years now. And one of the things that you may not know is that for Indian people, the amount of money spent on health care in this country is about $850, which is half of what's spent on a person who's a prisoner in the institutions in this country. So, you know, I understand that as citizens, we're citizens of the state as well as this country, and so it's with that I come to you today. The life expectancy for Indian people is around 68 years old, and for the average lifespan in the country is about 78. I really hope for early retirement, but that's not really the kind that I'm looking for, as a lot of my family and friends are feeling the same way. So, you know, when we talk about Oregon Health Plan Standard, it's a very real issue for us, as Laura talked about. What we experience is that for adults who come to us for treatment, they have complicated health care due to lack of health care access for a long time. So the complicated issues of diabetes, where we're three times more likely to have diabetes than the general population, more likely to have heart disease, hypertension, all those issues that are related to, you know, primary care needs, and we have overrepresented in asthma. We're one of several racial and ethnic groups in this state that are have overrepresented in disparities and underrepresented in access to care. And the Oregon Health Plan Standard, you know, as we talked about yesterday, has offered people an opportunity for mental health and alcohol and drug treatment that's not available. Men and women who lose their children because of their drug and alcohol or mental health issues can only get their children back sometimes if they can get treatment. Treatment access is limited for them because alcohol and drug treatment is not available through standard anymore. So this has presented the complicated issues around health care and the lack of access for resources to be able to do what we need to do for our people is really creating a problem. So I come to you today asking, as other people have before, for your help, your compassion for people in this state, for Indian people. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, while we're changing here,
yes,
a couple comments real quick. First off, on the dental situation, many of us feel dental has to be put back in. It's a preventative program, and the loss of dental is going to only drive the health care cost up. People need to know that the FEOP program, that's tied into our waiver, and there's a maintenance of effort issue here. So even if we wanted to pull general fund out of that, we would be endangering our maintenance effort on the entire waiver, which allows us to have OHP standard and allows us to carry on the programs we do have. We can't really risk that any more than we have to, and we're looking at that carefully. And again, I want to thank the hospitals, especially in the managed care organizations, for what they did in the last session. We forget very quickly the effort and the mm-hmm. pain people went through 2 years ago to put together a program that we did not know the federal government would accept or not. The difficulty in raising that money, the risks some of the hospitals took and some of the MCOs took in putting that money out, getting that money back together. The program's been successful to maintain a program that insures 25 to 30,000 Oregonians that we wouldn't have insured otherwise. And I want to congratulate the hospitals, especially once again, for stepping up and helping with that program. What a segue for you.
Great.
Didn't know you're up next.
Well, on deck we have Dr. William Johnson, Deborah Loy, and Lowen Furman. Why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Kevin Earls, representing the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And I'm before you this morning to address the level of funding provided to Oregon Health Plan, fully capitated health plans, for the provision of hospital services. We urge you to support the funding level of 90% of the cost of that care as outlined in the governor's recommended budget. This funding level strikes an important balance between honoring the commitment by this committee last session to restore funding to 100% and the recognition that Oregon's economy has been slower in recovery than was anticipated at that time. Senator Bates, thank you for that segue. Early in the 2003 legislative session, Senator Winters and then Representatives Westland and Bates convened a work group of providers, physicians, managed care organizations, and hospitals to address the shortage of funding available for the Oregon Health Plan budget. At that time, Senator Winters, chair of the committee, asked that we all put something in the pot to help the state continue to fund the Oregon Health Plan, given the dire financial circumstances that the state was facing. And Oregon hospitals were at that time scheduled to receive a rebasing of our rates, an increase in our rates, to reflect the determination of the state's actuary, PricewaterhouseCoopers, that the rates that the state had been paying for those services had not been adequately cast for the future. So that repricing of those rates was due to take effect based on the recommendations of the state's actuary. We did step up to the plate and put something in the pot at the urging of Senator Winters and now Senator Bates and Westland. And we put in to the pot that payment rebasing, which had an actuarial value to the state budget of around $49 million. That was our contribution to the pot to try and keep the budget moving and keep the Oregon Health Plan funded at that time. But the understanding was that this cut, which represented a temporary reduction of the fully capitated rates based upon the cost of services provided, would be reinstated with this biennial budget. And that agreement wasn't all that hospitals put into the pot last session. We also designed and helped pass a new hospital tax, a tax upon our total hospital net patient revenue that would be used to fund hospital services for all enrollees in the Oregon Health Plan standard program, a program that lost all state general fund support following the defeat of ballot measure 30. This new hospital tax has raised approximately $22 million in state funds in the past 6 months. And along with the federal matching funds it attracts, it's the reason that hospital services are still available to approximately 30,000 Oregonians and will continue during 2005-2007 budget cycle. These efforts represent some of the good deeds performed by Oregon hospitals to assist the state in funding its Medicaid program during the current economic recovery. And it represents our commitment to the partnership that we have with the state in order to provide care for Oregon's weakest and often sickest individuals. Looking ahead, we've agreed to support another deferral in the complete restoration of funding for managed care-based hospital services to the 90% level contained in the governor's recommended budget. This continued deferral represents a cut of $17 million in state funds and over $40 million when you count the federal matching funds that hospital will lose in the coming biennium due to that voluntary commitment to the 90% level. We ask you not to adopt cuts beyond this level in your final budget recommendations. Okay. Finally, it sometimes gets forgotten that cuts to OHP reimbursement have a direct and significant impact on the cost of private health insurance in the state. As we all struggle to try and continue to make health insurance affordable for employers and private citizens in the state, it's also important to recognize that these costs are paid by the state itself in administration of the benefits paid for public employees. It's sometimes said that no good deed goes unpunished, and we ask that in the interest of advancing the partnership between Oregon hospitals and the state of Oregon to best meet the needs of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens, you continue the commitment made last session by funding hospital services at the level contained in the governor's recommended budget. Thank you.
Senator Winters.
I, too, want to just kind of weigh in, because probably one of the most difficult aspects of negotiations and putting the budget together last session was the Oregon Health Plan, both the plus and the standard population. And I would not have been able to have crafted the budget that we did last session without the cooperation of the hospitals and others in the healthcare field. And I need to go on record to say that. I did ask the various providers to contribute to the pot, and recognizing that there had to be contributions from many in order for us to be able to continue to serve the citizens of the state. And the hospitals did step up, as well as the DME folks and others. And I think sometimes we don't know what's going on in the back room of getting everybody on board to make certain that the citizens of the state are served. And so I need to put that on record. And probably one of the toughest pieces of the negotiation was the provider tax piece. And had not we were able to do the provider tax, we would be in far worse of shape than we are today. So I just have to say that the hospitals and the nursing homes and the managed care organizations who worked to make certain that we did have coverage of individuals in this state. We did not anticipate that we would lose so many, but the fact is we would have lost more had not the hospitals and others stepped up to assist in this. So I...
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm going to chime in, but I'm going to let these people speak first, and I'll talk while people are changing.
All right. Ms. Salazar.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is José Alberto Núñez Díaz y López Faria.
By the way, welcome back.
Well, thank you. I go by Al Núñez. It's a lot easier. Since my retirement 3 years ago, I've been a member of the board of Yakima Valley Farm Workers Clinic, and at one time I was executive director of Salud Medical Center in Woodburn for 7 years. Senator Winters at that time was not engaged in politics, and she helped us with one of our fundraisers here in Salem. I guess she remembers. Anyway, Yakima Valley Farm Workers has 25 years experience providing primary care services, and these services cover an entire lifespan from prenatal to geriatrics through the entire life cycle. We're known in the community and throughout the Northwest as an experienced business model for providing quality, cost-effective health care. I'm here today to urge your careful consideration and equitable allocation of fiscal resources directed toward the Oregon Health Plan. It's a proven investment. Since its closure to further enrollment, we've seen uninsurance in Oregon raise to the highest in the country to over 613,000 people. Many of these are pregnant women and children. Our mission is to provide comprehensive, collaborative, culturally appropriate care to improve the quality of life for our most vulnerable, underserved, and underserved populations. Our Rosewood Family Health Center in southeast Portland opened last year at a time when the nearby county health clinic was closed because of budget constraints. That displaced over 8,000 clients throughout the southeast area. Our clinic in Hermiston has been providing health care services for over 18 years, and Salud for about 25 years. In addition, there's the Silverton Pediatric Clinic that's relatively new and the Lancaster Family Health Center here in Salem. In addition, we contribute to the economy of our communities with over 160 employees, including certified medical assistants, nurses, family practice physicians. And in 2004, our patient visits with all the five clinics in Oregon were over 50,000. And about 40% of those were uninsured. The federal government has pledged its support of community health centers by pledging to double the number of community health centers across the nation. And our federal legislatures have demonstrated commitment also. Congresswoman Hooley has contributed toward the expansion of badly needed dental services at Salud Medical Center. And Senator Smith has provided medical equipment for one of our clinics. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I ask that you demonstrate that Oregon's commitment to our state's most vulnerable populations are uninsured by wisely evaluating the current options and choosing to make a sound investment in the Oregon Health Plan. And I think that anybody that has been around healthcare knows that, and I remember many years ago when I was at Salud Medical Center, there was a study that said every dollar spent for primary care and preventive care saved at least $8 in emergency care. And those patients that are not seen on a regular basis, don't have a regular doctor, end up in the emergency room, and instead of paying a few dollars or maybe even up to a few hundred dollars, pay thousands of dollars for emergency room care. And so, like the guy says, pay me now or pay me later.
Okay.
So I urge you to really seriously consider the Oregon Health Plan's equity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lupita.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Lupita Salazar-Letcher. I'm the Oregon Development Coordinator for Yakima Valley Farmworkers Clinic. I am a nurse. By nature and by training, I'm a patient and community advocate. I'm also educated in the process of evaluating implemented programming for effectiveness. I'm here today to urge a careful review of the 71% budget increase into the Family Health Insurance Program, FHIP. While this program is beneficial for a small portion of the population, enrollment projections have never fully been attained, yet the state seems committed to investing valuable resources that have an extremely limited scope of impact, and the Oregon Health Plan remains closed to further enrollment. The impact to our community health centers is tremendous. The federal government has invested in community health centers as a model of accessible, affordable, and providers of continuous care. However, with the closure of the Oregon Health Plan, the poor economy, we are experiencing tremendous increase in patient needs. We are seeing clients delay care, they're coming in younger and sicker. They have been disenrolled from the Oregon Health Plan. Not only is public health compromised, but also the sustainability of our community health centers. I'd like to quickly illustrate the degree of crisis in our communities. A young man came into our clinic with dangerously elevated blood glucose levels, and we managed him in the clinic to avoid a costly hospital emergency room admission. He had been unable to afford his usual insulin and medical treatment. Women are foregoing timely prenatal care. To illustrate the importance of prenatal care, I have two patient profiles. The first case is a Latina woman expecting twins. She went without prenatal care, came to the clinic at 23 weeks gestation in labor. The hospital costs, neonatal intensive care costs, and life flight totaled almost $300,000. The second case is another Latina woman that came in for regular and timely prenatal care. She was also expecting twins. and she had gestational diabetes. This did add to some complications. By contrast, the cost for her hospitalization and care amounted to $2,300. This single event represents a cost savings of $277,000 in savings to our state. While there are those that do benefit from the Family Health Insurance Program, these patients illustrate a large segment of the population that do not have the financial capacity to enroll, to navigate the complicated system, which does not assure the return to the primary health care providers found in our community health centers. While I understand there are waiver requirements that mandate population expansion, maintenance of effort requirements for which the Family Health Insurance Program was chosen, I urge community members to evaluate its effectiveness and proper fit for the populations with the greatest needs, pregnant women, children, and families, in contrast to predominantly single adults. In closing, I'd like to share something I read with you upon entering the Capitol today that gives me hope. A free state is formed and maintained by a volunteer union of the whole people joined together under the same laws for the common welfare and sharing of benefits, justly apportioned. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for your time and efforts. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in. Do you have a question?
If I could ask a quick question.
Okay, Representative Hansen.
The two cases that you illustrated with mothers with twins.
Yes, sir.
If we'd been able to get outreach or get to them sooner, wouldn't both of them have been eligible for the Oregon Health Plus as unless they were way over income, which
sure.
Probably sounds like it's not the case.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, typically that is the case. We do have outreach enrollment workers. We do have community health workers that are educating our communities that go out to different communities. However, sometimes there is because of the economy and lack of physical ability to pay, they wait. And they don't come in timely because of the inability to pay or not being qualified for prenatal care.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming. We now ask Loan Berman, Dr. William Johnson, and Deborah Lloyd to come forward. Following them, we have Marion Finnemore, Cedric Hayden. Let's see. There's four, but we'll go ahead and work it out. So Marion Fillmore is on deck, and then Cedric Hayden, Mike Shurtleff, and Steve Petrosali.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I held my comments earlier,
sure,
so we get through testimony. You know, when we talk about people putting into the pot for the Oregon Health Plan or the Medicaid program in the state, there's others who do the same thing the hospitals do, and I congratulate all that do this. Nurse practitioners, PAs, physicians who are on fee-for-service take a fee schedule that is half of what they get paid for anything else and frankly lose money every time they see those patients. Our safe net clinics work on a shoestring to make this thing work. There's lots of people that put into the system a lot more than they get out of it, and I want to make sure they're recognized too. I want that on the record that while the hospitals step up, and I certainly appreciate what they do, others are doing the same thing to make the system work.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
The more and more that we do on a community-based level, the more, I mean, it just seems like there are more and more people that are stepping up because they realize it's neighbors helping neighbors in need. It's not some distant program. It's actual people to associate with. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good
morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm not very sophisticated about the legislative process. I work in on the front lines. My name is Lowen Berman. I work for Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. I'm the program manager of EMO's HIV Services Program. We operate the HIV Day Center and the Daily Bread Express Home Meal Delivery Program. We serve low-income individuals living with HIV and AIDS. About 90% of our clients are below the federal poverty level. The Daily Bread Express delivers meals to those who are homebound with HIV and AIDS. The HIV Day Center provides meals, counseling, day shelter, clothing, laundry facilities, showers, hygiene supplies, computers, telephones, a whole lot of other things. Our clients are all HIV positive. They are all poor. They are from minority communities. Half lack stable housing. 20% are homeless at any given time. And a majority deal with mental illness and or substance abuse issues. The client needs are overwhelming. We do what we can with the limited resources we have. Last year, we served about 350 unduplicated clients, provided about 35,000 meals, experienced 7,000 client visits to our day center, and at any given time, we're blessed with the help of more than 60 volunteers. I want to mention a few issues that are specific concerns to the HIV community, but I also want to say that we understand that many other communities are in desperate need, and we don't want to compete with these folks for funding. We believe that Oregon has the resources to provide for the basic needs of all of our vulnerable citizens and residents. Regarding HIV-specific concerns, we know that there are some funds in the ADAP program that have come from pharmaceutical company rebates, and that some legislators would like to use
well,
these.
It should be good if you don't use acronyms.
I'm sorry. ADAP is the AIDS. It's the federal Ryan White funding for HIV medications. It's the AIDS Drugs Assistance Program.
Thank you.
And through a fairly complex thing, which I don't quite understand completely, pharmaceutical companies rebate back to this program funds which have already been paid to them, but at a rate higher than the government contracts would call for. And so some of these funds have been returned, and I know that some legislators would like to use these funds for non-HIV-related purposes. But we are asking that the funds remain with the ADAP program and be rolled over into the next budget year. Why are we making this request? Because HIV drugs are hugely expensive, about $1,500 a month for folks on the antiretrovirals, and their availability is literally a question of life and death, because the numbers of people living with HIV disease continues to increase. 535 new cases in Oregon in the past year alone. Because as folks are excluded from OHP standard, it is the ADAP funds, often through the Care Assist program, which is funded by ADAP, that provide them with medicine and medical care. Because as we see more cuts in Medicaid coming, changes in Medicare, these put even more demands on the ADAP funds. So although there are some funds in there now, we know that the need is increasing rapidly, and we're very concerned that there will not be sufficient funds for folks to be able to get their meds. If folks with HIV don't get their meds, they die. Let me say a few more words about the Oregon Health Plan. I believe that we should all be outraged that nearly 100,000 of our neediest people have lost coverage in the past year or so. We're not living in a third world country. I walk the streets of Portland. I see them filled with expensive SUVs, large and beautiful homes. In this society of great wealth, there can be no excuse for denying medical care to our people, our neighbors, our brothers and sisters, and their families. I really ask you to stop any further cuts in the Oregon Health Plan and to begin to rebuild this very successful program. I ask you to restore dental coverage and the six-month fall-off provision. I ask for adequate funding for mental health and substance abuse programs. And for my zero-income clients, I ask you to restore emergency assistance and general assistance programs. I'd ask a lot more, but my time is limited. In the last few seconds, let me just... by the way, I want to thank the legislature for taking the needs of the HIV population seriously. A couple of years ago, we were really afraid that folks would lose their meds. And I had clients stopping strangers on the street and begging them to call the governor. I had clients pleading with other clients to take care of their wife after they're gone. I mean, it was a terrible time, and I really appreciate what the legislature has done in maintaining meds for folks living with HIV, and I'm asking you to continue doing that. And I just let me...
We need to conclude.
Okay. last few words. Allow me to remind you once again that a budget is a moral document, that you have a sacred trust to do what's right, not just what's expedient, and I know you take that trust very seriously, and that you will do all in your power to address the needs of our state's most vulnerable and least powerful people. I thank you for your time and attention and for your very important work.
Thank you, and thank you for all that you're doing. You're dedicating your life to serving the most needy. Appreciate that. Thank you. Who'd like to go next?
Good morning. William Johansson, a dentist. And this is my first time giving testimony, so bear with me. Thank you for the opportunity, though. Dear Honorable Committee members, I wish to give testimony in support of an adult dental benefit program that includes prevention as well as basic restorative dentistry services. Current scientific evidence demonstrates that dental pathogens contribute to a host of general medical conditions. These include cardiac disease, stroke, pneumonia, and even low birth weight babies. Dentistry is based upon a prevention model. Allowing dental disease to continue unabated progressively worsens the results and the need for more expensive interventions, which can include emergency room care for a treatable dental infection or diagnosis. Providing prevention and early intervention can avoid more costly and effective treatment options. Due to behavior or medical conditions, some disabled or elderly adults have to have their dentistry provided in an outpatient hospital setting. This is not a covered benefit under the OHP standard. If a dentist must take a patient to the hospital, comprehensive dental care would be done. The OHP standard benefit, which would primarily be to extraction of symptomatic teeth, would not maximize this hospital setting being utilized. A dentist relies on prevention and basic restorative dental services to help maintain teeth for as long as possible. Without having these types of services covered, a dentist is unable to prevent or abate the progressions of dental disease. An example such as the following could occur. The dentist sees a disabled patient with a toothache. The evaluation shows a tooth needs a deep filling. A filling is not a covered benefit. An extraction, which is a covered benefit, is inappropriate treatment for the tooth at that time. The patient has no funds for the uncovered or the filling that is not covered due to the coverage issue, for no treatment is done. The patient remains in pain and the tooth continues to worsen, and over time the tooth progressively worsens until it's unrestorable. The patient has an extraction of a tooth that could have been treated earlier with just a filling. The OHP population is quite different from the OHP standard group, and I sincerely urge you to consider the continuation of the OHP dental OHP plus dental benefit, which includes prevention and basic restorative dental care. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Loy, and I'm with Capital Dental Care, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and the rest of the committee members. Capital Dental Care is a dental care organization with the Oregon Health Plan. We're the largest dental care organization, insuring 110,000 OHP recipients. We have about 450 dentists statewide, and we even predated the Oregon Health Plan when an adult dental benefit wasn't included, and with the inclusion of the Oregon Health Plan, we all saw that big tidal wave of pent-up dentistry needs that came on with that coverage. It's consistently ranked an important benefit to those covered under the Oregon Health Plan when they've been asked that question. I won't be redundant to what Dr. Johansson has already said in the fact that the mouth is host to many, many oral bacteria, and through the progression of disease, those oral bacteria can find entry into the bloodstream and have an impact on systemic disease and overall health. Our Surgeon General has indicated that oral health is an important part of overall health, and that safe and effective disease prevention exists to help oral health be improved and prevent disease. Episodic tooth extraction of painful teeth doesn't address a disease process that has been strongly linked to overall health concerns, and that's periodontal disease. Simply extracting painful teeth doesn't address or treat periodontal disease. In the Oregon Health Plan Plus population are the vulnerable elderly and disabled adults, many of who are relying on caretakers themselves to help them in maintaining their oral hygiene. Most dentists who are treating this vulnerable population are trying to maintain teeth in the mouth as long as possible in order that these folks can have mastication, the ability to chew, and improve their overall health outcomes, and are disheartened when they don't have the ability to provide prevention and basic restorative care services that can lead to that and are ultimately only dealing with an extraction benefit. And not all tooth infection should be treated by an extraction. There are some very treatable things that can be done to the tooth without it being an extraction. I know our delivery system is made up of community providers, many of who will have to be making tough decisions to continue their participation if faced with just an extraction program for the vulnerable population in the PLUS program. When the Oregon Health Plan included the adults, and again, my plan predated Oregon Health Plan, there were many, many more dentists who were willing to participate in the plan when it was a family program. Those same dentists will have to be evaluating, and have shared they will be evaluating their decisions, which will ultimately, with a reduced network, impact the delivery of services available to children and pregnant women who will remain covered under the PLUS package. Also, studies consistently show that caretakers and adults who have dental coverage are much more likely to bring their children in for care. And that was shown even with the Oregon Health Plan's inception. And they take that priority more seriously themselves, and they include their children in it. And I've also been told by a very important person in the safety net networks that the safety nets are sort of maxed out, and they would not be able to just pick up a lot of the not covered benefit services that may present to their facilities. Okay. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Hansen.
Excellent oral testimony.
Thank you.
You can't leave that alone, can you?
Jeez. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Members of the court.
If you can just, I'll tell you what, Cedric, why don't we wait a minute and have just Mary and Fillmore come up first, and then there'll be seats for everyone. We'll read several. You will be summarizing, right?
Yes. I cut it down quite a bit, so. I want to say that I'm truly honored to be here today and have this opportunity to speak to you about a subject that's very near and dear to my heart, and that is the mental health needs of our most vulnerable citizens. My name is Marian Fenimore, and I am currently the Program Services Director at Jewish Family and Child Service. I've worked as a case manager and counselor for Jewish Family and Child Service and at a community mental health clinic in Portland. I can appreciate the very distinct roles that faith-based agencies and community mental health programs have in the field of mental health and social services. Some faith-based agencies operate counseling services like Jewish Family and Child Service, while others maintain shelters, drop-in centers, and meals programs. Imagine working at a shelter. You see someone who's noticeably agitated, and you don't know if this person has a mental illness, is on street drugs, or if they have a history of violence. The shouting and cursing get so bad that you have to call the police in order to keep safety in your facility. Although these programs offer a vital service to the most vulnerable members of our community, they are not equipped to deal with the treatment required to adequately care for people with a serious mental health diagnosis. When someone is referred to a mental health community clinic, they are often recovering from an acute episode of their illness. Their mental status is very fragile. They're loosely held together with a regimen of medication that they receive during a relatively short hospital stay. At the mental health clinic, the person sees a psychiatric nurse practitioner and are assigned a case manager. The case manager's job is to provide linkage to the treatment team and a variety of services, although the key to treatment is the relationship that the case manager has with his or her client. The trust that can develop over the long term may be the difference between reaching the person and getting them back on track or watching helplessly as they deteriorate further into a full-blown psychotic episode. Currently, it is typical for a case manager to have 150 clients on his or her caseload. 10 to 15 years ago, the average was a caseload of 35 to 50. I'd like to share a story about my client, Dave. Several years ago, I met with Dave in my office. He is paranoid and talking to voices I cannot hear. His hygiene is poor, and he reports that he has not slept or eaten for days. He is very agitated, and I suspect he has been off his meds for some time. He may also be taking street drugs. I try to convince him to get back on his meds, keep off the drugs, and make an appointment with a nurse for his medication. Later, after he has refused to take his meds, I try to convince him to go to the hospital, even though I know full well that he needs to be in far worse shape before the hospital will accept him. I get a call from the apartment manager who tells me that Dave is disturbing his neighbors by pacing and shouting all night long. He is at risk of eviction. I try to convince the apartment manager to give Dave another chance when I cannot be certain that he will not deteriorate further and be harmful to himself or others. I see Dave on the street, and he has cuts and bruises all over his face and arms. I suspect he's been in a street fight. Dave looks at me blankly. I realize he doesn't recognize me. I receive several calls from community members saying that Dave has been throwing his things out the window. The manager says he has no choice but to evict him and call the police. I only hope that when the police arrive, he will finally get the help he needs and that nothing tragic will happen. I recall working for a week to get Dave in the hospital a few weeks ago, only to have him present at the ER and be released because he was not demonstrating a serious enough danger to himself or others. With adequate mental health treatment, many people suffering from mental illness can get better. Some maintain without recurring hospitalizations. Some improve and hold down long-term jobs. Some enter careers and lead normal lives. All of this is possible if we give people with mental illness the tools and treatment they need to and deserve. Our public dollars should provide for community mental health treatment and the support and structure our citizens with mental illness rely on. As a society, we owe it to them to keep them safe, keep them healthy, and give them hope. And I guess I'm just urging you to restore and maintain the mental health services under OHP and the human services budget. And I thank you for your time and effort.
Thank you. Thanks for the work that you do.
You're welcome.
Cedric Hayden, Mike Shurtleff, Steve Petrozelli. On deck, we have Jessica Stevens, Lou Kronenberg, and Randy Davis. And looks like Dan Smith as well. Okay, who's first?
I guess I'm sitting in the number one seat. Hi, Mr. Chair, the illustrious members of the committee. I'm Dr. Mike Shurtleff. I'm the dental director and president of probably the largest community-based healthcare system in Oregon, Advantage Dental and Northwest Dental Services. We're located in 22 rural counties, made up of a cooperative of 250 dentists. We insure. We're the second largest provider of health plan services for dental. There are over almost 70,000 now. We also insure around 40,000 commercial patients. through our company, Advantage Dental Plan. I don't really know where to begin this morning. A lot of you have heard most of what I've said before, but I think I would start with a place that I brought testimony last session where I was working in the Northwest Medical Team's van when I had a little gal who worked down at Carl's Jr. as a shift captain, and she made $50 more than you allowed to have to be on the Oregon Health Plan. And she'd been to the hospital emergency room twice, and I actually had copies of the bills and presented those as testimony last session. Each bill was $1,300. She still had the tooth, and I took it out for free in the Northwest Medical Team van. And she'd lost her job because of the abscess that she'd had. Well, I was in the Northwest Medical Team van yesterday in Green, Oregon. Some of you know where that is. It's down between Winston and Roseburg at Sunny Slope School. And it was... I had a bunch of mainly treating kids, but the significant thing was is there was a mother of a child who wasn't covered under the Oregon Health Plan, brought the child who was covered under the Oregon Health Plan to the clinic because she didn't know what to do for sure because she wasn't covered. The child was covered, but she wasn't covered. And so what I did was I assisted her to get the child to her already the dentist that she had. So the next day we had her appointment because the child was having difficulties, but the mother was confused because she didn't have any coverage. And I saw 11 people in the van yesterday. All of them, her two children were covered. They had a dentist. But the mother and the rest of the people weren't covered. And very frankly, the children that I saw were probably all eligible. But because their parents weren't covered, they didn't know how to, they didn't have the children covered. They didn't get them in the system. Well, that was just yesterday's story of working in the Northwest Medical Team's van. I had the opportunity a couple months ago to go to Washington. Washington has to talk to their Medicaid program because they're interested in what we're doing in Oregon. Because one thing we have in Oregon that they don't have in Washington is that in the Oregon Health Plan, 340,000 people or whatever the number is, 100% of them have a dentist. Now, they may not access the dentist, and they won't be able to get to the dentist as quick as they might want to get to the dentist because where you're doing ration, prioritized, managed health care, which allows people to get basic services rather than whatever they want, whenever they want it. But the question that the lady from Washington Medicaid asked me was, what's your utilization rates? Because they're in trouble with the federal government because they have a few people getting a lot of services and not very many people participating because their reimbursement levels are so low that they can't get access to care. And one thing we have in Oregon, and I don't want us to forget, is the Oregon Health Plan and dental has been a resounding success. Yeah, you hear a lot of complaints from a lot of constituents, but they all have a dentist and they can get their basic needs taken care of. And so the problem we're having is as I've shared with some of you, we cut the fat out of the Oregon Health Plan dental last time. As you remember, we are a net contributor to the provider tax. We give more money and then we get back. In fact, we actually, by the money we put into the system, probably reduce the cost of OHP dental because we give in more than we get back for the standard population. And if you cut the proposed cuts that you're doing, you're actually going to reduce the tax. You're going to have less money for the people that you have covered under the Oregon Health Plan standard now, so you're going to have a spiraling more. And we cut all the fat last time. In fact, if a lot of you remember who were here in the last session, dentistry actually came and offered a lot of cuts to help out. And we've been, and there are all these things we can do. But what we're doing now is cutting into the meat, cutting the meat off the bone. And you're starting to cut the program. And up until this time, all of the DCOs have been able to get together and come with a unified front, but we don't know exactly for sure how to cut anymore, and we're starting to kind of fight with each other about how do we do this, and how do we reduce the program and still have a program. So I would urge you, I appreciate the fact that you've restored the emergency cuts, the piece that you put in, and we're really talking about $7 million. Of funds to restore the state to buy any in the cost for dental to continue the program as is, and I'd urge you to do that. As another side, has had the opportunity to work through the Robert Woods Johnson grants that the state's got, the $1 million grant that you remember that dental got through the works of the health department and the DCOs and a lot of people and the local health departments. And I had the opportunity to go to their meeting to talk about the results of that in Phoenix last year. And all the six states that were there had programs to try to entice a dentist to participate in Medicaid, What we were talking about is an early childhood cares program to reduce and make the health care of our children better and save costs. We had the program in place they were trying to get in place. So I'd hate to see us unravel that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we ask Mr. Britton to get us as much information as possible on that relationship between the provider tax and that the dental organizations pay and the cost for the dental program, sure. So we can, because I think that might be the answer to getting back in.
And he is right, Mr. Chairman. The last time the dental community did offer up more things in order to be a player.
Mr. Chair, it may be good if all of the just a summary of all of the provider tax that were done last session and the contribution that was made by the various groups.
That'd be good. Let's have if we can get a breakdown on the sources of the provider tax. Senator Vick?
Kind of an overall review of the dental situation. Over the last 12 years, the dental groups that provide for the Oregon Health Plan have stepped up on at least three different occasions, reprioritized what they're doing, and have continued to be the most effective people to step back and saying, we can cut this, we can cut this, we can cut this. What I'm really fearful of in this particular go-around is that if any further cuts to the dental care organization will mean they won't exist, we'll lose our framework, and we will not be able to rebuild those. To build those initially was a huge battle. The dentists, quite frankly, were a little leery of getting involved in this kind of a program and doing capitated care. They have made it work. They've made it be successful. But if we cut these programs any further, we're going to lose those care programs. And when we lose them, I don't think we can rebuild them. The dentists will never come back to the table again. I wouldn't blame them for not doing that. They don't have to be doing this. They've stepped up and said, we're going to make this thing work, and they made it happen. So we're in a position right now where I firmly believe that if we cut these programs any further, we lose the programs. We don't just lose another level of care. We lose the programs, and we really can't afford to do that.
Thank you. Representative Hanna.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As Senator Bates mentions, and he calls it a program, but I think significantly that everyone needs to understand what we're calling a program is a model for access to care, and especially in rural Oregon where that access is difficult already. If you lose what we're calling a program, what you're losing is a model for access to care. And those dentists that are part of that access to care now, if that panel goes away because we don't fund that program, rebuilding a panel is a process you would not want to hope to have to do. And that's what, as we can generically call it a program, this is a group of dentists all over Oregon who provide access to care, and that's really where we're at in treating people, and we need to maintain that.
Mr. Chair, can I just add a little bit to that?
This, by the way, this is music to their ears. Yeah.
They've got a heck of a case.
It's very important because we take and separate somehow, and I haven't figured out why we do this, the body. And we don't look in terms of the dental care and access to the rest of the anatomy of the body. I've said kind of interesting, we talk about jobs, and yet, you know, if the individual doesn't have the mouth that looks pleasant and what have you, we want them to get jobs and they can't get them. We talk about if there is a tooth that's really bottom, we're willing to pay for them to go to the emergency room rather than to have the preventive care. And the dentists have, you know, pointed out to us how we can save money in the long run. And it's kind of interesting, and that we don't connect all the dots. And I think it's interesting, and I'm glad to hear you talk about not only access to care in rural areas, but I think we need to talk about, the access and what the long-range outcomes are. And they stepped up to the plate. I just have to say the majority of the entities last session put their money and where their mouth, excuse me, I didn't mean a bad analogy, but they did. They did. And I do agree at some point we have to recognize how much can we continue to peel away.
Okay. You know, if this was
can't take anymore.
If this was an appellate court situation and you were hearing this from
the panel of judges, you probably wouldn't say no further comments, Your Honor.
We will be brief.
But at the risk of changing this mood, why don't you go ahead and proceed?
Thank you, Mr.
Summary judgment here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the rest of the panel members for your kind remarks also. I'm Steve Petrozelli. I'm President and CEO of Willamette Dental Group, and we take care of about 54,000 of our members of the Oregon Health Plan, in addition to being commercial in the commercial insurance business, and we have dental offices in most of the major metropolitan areas of the state. You have, in fact, taken away most of my comments. I will be very brief and really zero in on just one area, and that is prevention. And that is the key to dentistry. And I think if there's any place where you can point in healthcare where it is a success, it is in dentistry. One major point. Prior to the Oregon Health Plan, as with Capital Dental, we participated in a state program for children only on a capitated basis. Never got more than 19% to 23% of those that were eligible to actually come in for treatment. Once the adults were able to come in and receive a reasonable amount of routine treatment through scheduled appointments, we now find that they're bringing them in, the children are coming in, at levels very, very close and similar to what we experience at Willamette Dental under our commercial programs. And so this year, with a limited budget, I know the emphasis has been on with children, whether we're talking about education, nutrition, many of the subjects that are being discussed. I strongly urge you that you do not cut back the Oregon Health Plan and dentistry any further, because I think if you stop bringing the adults in, you're going to be back in a situation where the children don't come in, and prevention works best when it's taught early in life. So we can not only save money today by keeping these people out of emergency rooms, we can save money in the future based on the fact that these children's needs will not be as severe as the parents who are bringing them in. Thank you for your time and your kind remarks again.
Okay. Well, Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, Senator Winters, Representative Hansen, Representative Hanna, and Mr. Britton. For the record, my name is Cedric Hayden. I'm from Fall Creek. I represent the Hayden Family Dentistry Group. We are a medium-sized dental care organization caring for 27,000 lives, 27,000 people, and 864,000 teeth. We urge the continuation of adult dental care. The plus, my resume is attached, just to let you know that I understand how to deliver low-income dental care to low-income family. I will very briefly recap some of the things that you've already heard. Budget leaders have approved, in principle, $5.1 million, very nearly half the money needed to run a viable program, and we strongly recommend continuation of the full program that exists during this session into the next session. We would ask that you not eliminate the prevention component. You've heard much about prevention today. If you run an emergency-only program, you eliminate the prevention, and the Health Services Commission has ranked prevention very high in the prioritized list, very, very high indeed. We urge that we not lose that. There are some other considerations. You heard Al talk, and he said prevention prevents people going into the hospital emergency rooms. A Maryland study says that saves $650 on average. Prevention can save emergency room visits and save $650 per visit. Some of those emergency room visits become hospital admissions at a Maryland study's average of $8,874 per admission. These can be avoided because managed dental care is very inexpensive. $7.20 on average per adult per month will prevent those large costs. There is a generous federal match. The program is popular with seniors. It is operated at a community level, and that's why it is successful. It is operated by local people, for local people. And rather than just extracting the teeth and letting them have that gap tooth smile, if the teeth are fixed, the seniors can participate in community events, and some people can go back to work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming forward. I would like to hear now from Jessica Stevens, Dan Smith, Lou Kronberg, and Randy Davis.
Hmm.
Good morning, Chair Richardson, members of the committee. My name is, for the record, my name is Randy Davis. I work at the Oregon State Hospital, a member of SEIU Local 503. We're here to talk to you today about the DHS budget maintaining the current level of care at the Oregon State Hospital. It's a little bit of a change in gears from the dental plan. I'm sorry for that. I'd like to take a chance to talk to you today about making sure that we continue with the high quality of care that we provide at the state hospital, and encourage you to not follow the governor's recommended budget for closure of any of the geropsychiatric treatment units and the any units at the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center or Treatment Center in Pendleton. You heard earlier in last week or this week from Bob Nichols from the Oregon Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. OMAS, I don't know you a quarter, Jackie, on that one. I told you what it is. and about how he feels right now there isn't an adequate community placements to close any of the geropsychiatric wards in that throughout the state. From listening to our coworkers who work in the placement of the people, the elderly psychiatric patients, there's not a commitment from government status or from the communities right now to create enough community beds to close any of the geropsychiatric units at the hospital, meaning there are not enough people in the community within the nursing home realm that are willing to take these patients because they understand that they're at the state hospital because they're unmanageable in other community settings. So as we face this dilemma of not having community settings, we know that moving patients out of the hospital is really important. And so we can get that firm commitment from the community and from other government resources to be able to move people out of the hospital. We're asking that none of the units be closed until we get a firm commitment that we have placements for these people where they deserve to be treated and have a safe environment that provides adequate care, at least as adequate as they get at the hospital within the community.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, Senator Winter, Senator Bates, my name is Lou Cronenberg. I'm a mental health therapist at the Oregon State Hospital. I also represent 820 of those employees. I am the local SEIU president. I come to you today to remind you what my coworkers face every day at our hospital when they go to work. When you ask for workers' compensation information, what you're seeing is people that are what you're actually seeing are real people that have been injured at work. Last year alone, on one unit, on a maximum security unit, we had 116 attacks or assaults on staff. Senator Winters, I had the opportunity this winter to speak with you and some of my other coworkers to come and testify to you about some of those injuries. I'm not going to take the time to get into detail with those injuries, but some of you folks have seen in the media how bad some of those can be. It's just been recently that under the new administration, we've been allowed to be able to take our fellow coworkers to the emergency rooms. Before, we weren't allowed to do that. You would actually have to show for yourself there or find a ride or even in some cases call a cab. A lot of the injuries at the Oregon State Hospital are due to mandatory overtime, overcrowding, and understaffing is one of our largest problems there. The state treasurer estimated that we could save $700,000 by filling 40 vacancies at our hospital. It's not an easy job. It's very difficult. None of us do it to get rich. We all have our different reasons for doing it. Most of us love what we do. As Dr. Fickle, the superintendent of our hospital, often mentions, we are so understaffed. The state hospital remains understaffed because of decades of long slashing of full-time employees. What we're asking is just for more staffing, more space, and that's basically what I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Daniel Smith, Dr. Daniel Smith, psychologist resident at the Oregon State Hospital. I'm also a member of SEIU and treasurer of the local at the hospital. I have been fortunate to be a member of the steering committee for the master plan for the hospital and have been able to take part in the discussions about the future of the hospital and the hospital's current needs. I know that report will be coming out, and I don't think that I'm giving anything away when I say that our current hospital is obsolete and unsafe. It's a dangerous setting both for our clients and for our staff. It does not meet current Oregon codes for construction, and it does not meet the standards of care established in the mental health industry. We need to do something. Too many years, the state of Oregon has band-aided the hospital, has spent money trying to bring things up to code or at least make them slightly more livable. It's time for the state of Oregon to take a serious look at mental health in the state, beginning with the safety net, beginning with the state hospital. Everybody who cannot be well treated inside of the prisons, cannot be well treated inside of the communities, cannot be well treated anywhere else, ends up at the state hospital. Given the problems with mental health provision and the lack of funding throughout the state, we're seeing more and more people come in because they don't have medications in the community, because they don't have adequate support. It's time for the Oregon State Hospital to be brought into the current century. It's time. And we would just thank you very much for looking at the underfunding of mental health and of the Oregon State Hospital. We appreciate that you take this very seriously. We look forward to working with you and with the legislature and DHS in providing good care and quality care to our many patients. Thank you very much for listening.
Mr. Chair,
Senator, what?
Can I just say a quick comment? And because I'm aware of, and I have met with staff, I want to say a thank you to them because these 116 attacks and things that happen inside of that institution has gone unnoticed until there was the big thing in the newspaper. And as legislators, we have a responsibility to assure that they're operating in a safe environment. It isn't a safe environment on a daily basis out there at the state hospital. And when they came to talk to both Senator Courtney and I, it was not to come to complain, but to come to advise us of what really was taking place inside of their environment. You have a lot of dedicated employees who are out there who have put their lives online and have been injured. I was the one that asked for the workers' comp reports because they tell us that injury is an ongoing thing that's happening out there. And so the issues that they bring before us today are issues that I think we have to pay attention to. I'm looking forward to the steering committee's master plan, and hopefully other members of this body will also begin to pay attention to what's occurring in our mental health system, both in the communities as well as at the state hospital. And I just have to say thank you for bringing that forward to Senator Courtney and I. I know sometimes how difficult it is for employees to come and talk to state legislators, and I commend you.
Thank you, Senator Winters.
Thank you very much. Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One large concern I have is that the draft report coming out middle of May, that the timing of it in terms of us being able to react in a positive manner to it during this session is in jeopardy. And so I'd really urge, I think there's bipartisan commitment to do something and to help solve that problem. And I really hope that we can fit into the close of session scheduling a way to really examine the draft report. We're all real eagerly awaiting it, and take some action and really commit ourselves to responding to it, because this is an opportunity to clean up a festering wound on our state that's been with us for a long time, and we just can't let it slip by.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We're running out of time.
I know we're running out of time. And so while they're changing, I want to make a comment. Go.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
When you get this report, it's going to be helpful to us, but we have to understand that this is part of a system that's not functioning more. We've got to slow the number of patients coming to this hospital, make sure the hospital is a safe environment to work in, and try to do what we can to move people out of the hospital in safe environments in the community. And you're never going to solve the problem in the hospital if you don't slow the influx of patients into it. That means our community-based health, mental health centers have to be funded properly so they can do their job.
Absolutely.
We cannot continue doing this, and we cannot continue to take cases from the courts and just dump them into a hospital and think we're going to solve the problem. It's never going to happen. So what we do at the hospital is really important. I understand that, but what happens before that happens is also important. Our local hospitals are holding patients for weeks at a time, waiting for openings to occur at the state hospital. Behind that is a backlog of people that we're seeing in emergency rooms. We're just sending back out to the community because we can't even put them in the hospitals. The whole system's backing up because we're not doing what we need to preventively. So that's my key to this problem, is you've got to reinstate the programs we used to have and slow the influx of people into the state hospital and then support the state hospital. Thank you.
Absolutely. We look forward to that report. I wish it were here 2 months ago. Ellen Lowe, Angela Kimball, Kristen Saxton.
We wouldn't even got this part. I hadn't convinced the government. Well, we wouldn't be this far if we hadn't made it immediate.
Why don't you go ahead and start?
Hi, my name is Kristen Saxton, and I work at Outside In Clinic in Portland. We serve homeless youth and adults. People, we have an urgent care clinic. It's walk-in. We see about 50 people every day, and I would say less than 20% of these people have Oregon Health Plan. So we're truly seeing the uninsured, people with no income, people living in shelters, under bridges, chronic mental health issues, and other very serious issues. My job at this clinic has, in the past, been primarily to sign people up for the Oregon Health Plan, which was a big focus of our clinic. And now my job has changed focus from not being able to sign people up on the Oregon Health Plan because they're not taking any more people, to then trying to find some other resources in the community, which usually boils down to sending people to the emergency room and then helping them apply for financial assistance, because there really aren't many other options out there. And I know you've heard a lot of testimony today, but I just came today to represent some of my clients who couldn't be here and just kind of give you a face to why Oregon Health Plan is so important and why we need to keep that as an option for people. One person we saw yesterday came into our clinic, and his hand had been burned in a fire, and it happened on Saturday, and he came into our clinic on Tuesday, and it was really horrible, swollen, white. He was starting to lose the feeling in his fingers. And I asked him why he hadn't gone to the emergency room before this, and he said that he was terrified of getting more hospital bills, that the first time he went to the hospital a while ago after an assault, he had a $5,000 hospital bill. And he was trying to get his life back together and felt like he just couldn't incur any more debt. And all I could think was, he had gone through 3 days of this hand that was horribly burnt, and the unwillingness to get the hospital bills kept him in that amount of pain for 3 days. And so we sent him to the emergency room and are going to help him with financial assistance, but it's just really not a viable healthcare system for people. And this is just one person who we see cases like this all the time. And I have another man who I saw a couple of weeks ago. He came in for what he thought was a minor healthcare issue and had some blood testing done and ended up being diagnosed with leukemia. And the doctors bring him into my office and try, you know, say, can you help him get health insurance, find some resources? And really, the only option that I can see for him is applying for disability, which takes a very long time. And in the meanwhile, he has leukemia. There's no hope of adequate health care anytime soon. And I know that the FEOP program is available as insurance for people, but it's really not an option for most of the clients that I see because they don't have any income. They don't have the ability to go through the process of applying for a program like that. And there's a 6-month waiting period for anyone who has pre-existing health conditions. So that's not, whereas it's a great program, it's not viable for all of the clients who I see who do have pre-existing conditions and who don't have any income. And then, of course, we do see people who have the Oregon Health Plan, and they're so thankful that they have the Oregon Health Plan, and we do everything in our power to make sure that they continue to be enrolled. And it makes a significant difference in their lives. People who have very serious health care issues couldn't survive without the Oregon Health Plan. So I'm very thankful that that program exists, and I hear you that you understand the importance of continuing the program as well. And then
thank you very much.
Okay. I just wanted to show you a picture. This came from a little 4-year-old. It says, "Thank you for getting me onto the Oregon Health Plan." And that's why I do the job that I do, and I'm just I just wanted to bring that to you as kind of the face of, like, kids out there who their parents, it's true that they think, oh, I can't enroll anyone in Oregon Health Plan now. And so there's a lot of education to be done on getting youth and kids on the Oregon Health Plan and keeping the dental benefits for them. It's so important, the preventive dental benefits. We see adults who don't have any teeth left. Their teeth are rotting out. They try to pull their teeth themselves, and preventive dental would be so helpful for them.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Angela.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, my name is Angela Kimball, and I'm representing the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. And first of all, I'd just like to thank the committee for understanding the value of the Oregon Health Plan, and particularly those of you who provide such leadership last session in really helping heal the splintered Oregon Health Plan and recognizing the tremendous value, not only in human terms, but also in financial terms, of treating the whole person, the whole body. As community mental health programs, we really appreciate your support of the Oregon Health Plan, but we also want to emphasize to you what I'm sure you understand by now, and that's the impact of one program impacts all the other programs in our state often. For example, with the reduction from 118,000 covered lives under Oregon Health Plan standard down to about 25,000, we're impacting not only the community mental health programs, but our jails and prisons, our schools, our local hospitals, and our families, including families like Sharon and John, who called me on Sunday afternoon, who have a son. They never thought that their only son would have a mental illness. At 25 years old, he was struck with paranoid schizophrenia. He lost his job. His parents took him in, but because he's in his mid-20s, he's not covered by their insurance. So they've been scraping by to pay for a psychiatrist. But he's not stable yet. And so they've had to call the police a couple of times because his delusions are causing him to lash out in violence. And just this last week, the police came and took him to a psychiatric ward in Corvallis. And he's due to be released this afternoon. They loved their son more than anything in the world. This was their pride and joy. But they're also terrorized. And they're wondering, how are they going to take care of him? Now, we'll try and get him on the Oregon Health Plan Plus through disability. But as those of you who sat through the Social Security Administration's Medicare Modernization Act explanation of yesterday afternoon, you can well understand the difficulty and the length of time it takes to apply for something like disability. And in the past, this would be an individual that we'd enroll in the Oregon Health Plan standard to bridge that time until this individual were determined eligible for disability. At this point, we have to rely on the community mental health system that itself has undergone tremendous cuts and must serve tens of thousands more people who are uninsured.
Thank you, Representative Hanson.
We've been told in earlier testimony by the department that if
somebody applies for disability or SSI, that there's presumptive eligibility for Oregon Health Care Plus. Is that the case? It sounds like that's not happening during that period of time while we're waiting to determine eligibility.
Chair Richardson and Representative Hansen, I admit that I am woefully unprepared in the intricacies of Social Security laws, et cetera. I only know that the process does take time, and once somebody's actually applied and eligibility is thought to be likely due to meeting criteria, mm-hmm. there can be a presumptive eligibility. But for many people, it's not known at the outset whether they're going to be eligible or not, okay. because the whole process takes so long, and so we don't automatically have the ability to bill and to treat as though one is going to be on.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe, legislative advocate for the Oregon Law Center and the Oregon Food Bank, and it's on their behalf that I question the capacity provided for the health cluster within the proposed budget to meet the legal requirements for maintenance of effort and to honor Oregon's commitment to the population who really were the subjects of these agreements. The structure of the health cluster public testimony also perpetuates a separation of health services into silos, rather than encouraging a comprehensive discussion of the interrelatedness of mental, physical, dental, and public health. The Oregon Health Plan was a promise to include mental and dental health as integral parts of the healthcare system. And Senator Winters talked about this a little bit earlier. When mental health and chemical dependency outpatient services were eliminated from March of 2003 until August of 2004, there was a negative impact on all parts of the healthcare system. There was also a negative impact on the local and community and state correction system. And so the fiscal consequences as well as program of that decision would appear to far exceed the savings. Having been part of previous waiver negotiations, I know a request to reopen discussions with CMS will be met with resistance, but I do believe that the Insurance Pool Governing Board will be challenged to meet the maintenance of effort that's facing them, and it would be so beneficial if about one-third to one-half of the general fund for the FEOP program, the general fund, could be transferred to the standard program. The Oregon Health Plan was built upon a methodology of developing a list of condition treatment pairs that moved from the most important to the least important. And so you're going to find dental services throughout that list, and to concur with the recommendation to eliminate dental services is really a violation of the Oregon Health Plan.
Okay.
It also violates evidence-based medicine.
Thank you.
I encourage you to read the rest of my testimony. Part of it responds to Representative Hansen's question.
Thank you very much. And we appreciate the information you've given. And I would like to now call on Sharon Baird, or Sean Baird, Nan Heim, and Ellen Pitney, or Penny.
Mr. Chair, my chuckle was that Ellen and I served together in the Health Service Commission for years, and to develop 20,000 pairs of codes, 20,000 and over, and prioritize them was a Herculean effort that is still continuing, but it actually works. It saves us about $50 million biennium in health care costs by using that list. But when she started saying those words, it brought back some old memories that made me chuckle. Okay. Thank you, Ellen, for your work.
Thank you. It's ongoing service. We appreciate it. Whoever would like to start?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Nan Heim, representing the Oregon State Ambulance Association. Our members are emergency 911 ambulance service providers, both public agencies and private companies throughout much of the state. And with me this morning is Sean Baird, who is the co-owner of Woodburn Ambulance and also a working paramedic for his own company. 4 years ago, led by Senator Winters, this subcommittee got us an increase in our Oregon Health Plan reimbursement for advanced life support calls from what was just 30% of cost to about 60% of cost. This much-needed and much-appreciated increase cost about an additional $600,000 per biennium. 4 years later, with increasing costs, especially in rural areas where ambulances have to take longer transports, we are now less than 50% of cost. The impact of low reimbursements on emergency ambulance service is especially severe. For one reason, Medicare cuts have also taken place, and of course, the state's Motor Vehicle Accident Fund has disappeared. That used to reimburse ambulances and hospitals for uninsured motor vehicle accident victims, and it no longer exists. The impact is also severe because, as I think most of you know, emergency ambulance service providers must and do serve all patients, regardless of their insurance status or their ability to pay. And Sean is going to address briefly the impact on service. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as Nan mentioned, we really are the only medical provider that you can call, and we will be literally at your side wherever you are within just a few minutes. That is a service available to everybody in the state, given the fact that there are some extremely remote that might take more than a couple minutes to get to. Unfortunately, a couple things are happening. One is, as the many stories you've heard today from people who've had limited access to health care, the common theme seemed to be a reliance on emergency care at the end of the day. And we are that emergency care access point for many patients, less and less of whom have the Oregon Health Plan, and those that don't are making a bigger part of our patient load. And as Nan mentioned, we don't have any ability to schedule in a certain number of insured patients to offset that impact. A couple of immediate impacts of the failure of reimbursement to keep up with our cost. In the city of Salem here, starting in July, when you call for an ambulance, that few minutes is going to be a few minutes more than it is right now. They have had to redesign their system. They're going with a new deployment where an ambulance will take 10 to 12 minutes to arrive at your side versus the 6 to 8 that it currently does. That's a direct result of the reimbursement issues facing our industry. In Woodburn, as well as in Salem, we've gone from having two paramedics on an ambulance to one. And this has a huge impact on our ability to provide care, particularly at accident scenes where there are multiple patients that all require advanced procedures to be done, and one person simply can't do everything that needs to be done for them. So these are very real issues, they're very real impacts, and we recognize our responsibility to take care of every single person who calls as quickly as we can. The only caveat to that is, depending on how much resources we have to deploy, we can only get there in so much time or with so many of the properly trained people. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share that with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi. For the record, my name is Ellen Kinney. I work with the Oregon Health Action Campaign, and I really appreciate this opportunity to provide testimony on a program that is so important for the health care of Oregon's medically and economically vulnerable. Our coalition has always been a strong supporter of the Oregon Health Plan. It is not only provides health access, it is an economic driver for our state. It's one of the tools we have for closing the ranks of the uninsured, and it supports our safety net clinics. We believe the Oregon Health Plan deserves continued support and, in fact, expanded support. We would support and ask you to support a reinstatement of the tobacco tax and its expansion. We believe that we should do everything we can to capture employer contributions for people who are employed and insured through the Oregon Health Plan. And we also support increase in the provider tax because the provider tax is not equal across for hospitals or managed care plans. But in times of economic challenges and budgetary restraints.
Would you mind just clarifying that?
Medicaid,
I don't know why it's not equal across.
The Medicaid managed care, Mr. Chair, the Medicaid managed care tax, I think, is at something like 5.7%, and the tax on hospitals is around 1% right now. I understand that CMS is asking, is going to be directing states to reduce their provider taxes to 3% or less. But either way, it would be wonderful if we could capture the level of the tax that we can achieve now through the waiver that we have.
Okay, thank you.
We our coalition believes that it's vital to, in this time of budgetary constraints, it's vital to examine the cost effectiveness of the Oregon Health Plan and all of its components and to what extent each provides access. At its most basic, enrollees in the Oregon Health Plan can be divided into those who are traditionally or categorically eligible for Medicaid, the age, blind, disabled, and families who are receiving temporary assistance to needy families. We operate now under a waiver that allows us to use federal Medicaid money and federal CHIP money for an expansion population. That expansion population includes the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program enrollees, CHIP kids in the Oregon Health Plan, and what is left of our standard population.
Okay, so your main recommendation is that we expand the Oregon Health Plan. Is that what you'd like us to remember?
Mr. Chair, there's something particularly related to allocation of public resources around the we view the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program as a part of the Oregon Health Plan. We believe that the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program and the Oregon Health Plan provide access to some enrollees at the same income level, namely kids. In addition, the Family Health Insurance Program, as you all know, covers adults up to 185% of the federal poverty level. Both of these programs use Children's Health Insurance Program dollars. In fact, 88% of FEAP's budget is matched with Children's Health Insurance Program dollars. FEAP, unlike standard, is able to use CHIP dollars for adults, not only adults who have children, but adults who have no children. This is interesting to us because CHIP money was meant for kids, because the Oregon Health Plan Medicaid program is doing virtually no outreach to children because of fear of budgetary impacts. And because two-thirds of Oregon's uninsured children are estimated to be eligible for but not enrolled, and because CMS is increasingly concerned about the allocation of CHIP money for adults. We ask you to ask some serious questions about the utilization of CHIP resources, which I will send you in an email, my list of questions. And I just want to mention briefly the maintenance of effort requirement that seems to bind you to increasing FEAP's budget substantially while holding standard as is with no state contributions. We believe that the FEAP expansion comes at the expense of OHP, Medicaid, and CHIP. We believe that every child we enroll in OHP, Medicaid is therefore not a child we can enroll in FEAP, so there is a tension there.
Okay, thank you. And you probably are, I'm sure you're aware, since you're very knowledgeable about this, that the maintenance of effort that has to be met for the next biennium, some $23 million or so, has to be met, and what's going to happen in 2 years is really up in the air, because it's very questionable whether or not the kind of allocation of funds that must essentially happen in the next 2 years is going to be able to be done after that time. But
Mr. Chair, can I make one comment? There are attorneys and waiver experts with whom we are now working who remain unconvinced that the maintenance of effort requirement is as it has been presented to you. They believe there are likely ways to reshift Oregon's public resources back into standard and OHP Medicaid expansion without any penalty from CMS, that the waiver gives us that flexibility now, just as it gives us the flexibility to increase standard up to 100 20-25%. That was the intent, was not to create a program that covered access for people at higher levels of the poverty while closing it for the most low income.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to receive anything in writing that would
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Give further information on that. Thank you. We have Ellen Penny, Eloise Brown, and Richard Kosian.
Ellen, come again.
Ellen, you know what? I didn't check out the list. Sorry.
That's pretty smart.
I think you did
up twice.
That's right. There you are. I've gotten my notes. Okay, so. Hello. And. We have, there's several of us that have a 10:30 meeting, so we're going to need to make sure that we end a little bit early if possible. So why don't we dive right in.
Mr. Chair, is Tom Holt on that for the small mine pharmacist? Is his name on there?
I don't see
it. I'll get the last sheet. There's one more sign-up sheet over there. Okay.
We will find out. Please dive in.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Richard Kosasan with the Pacific Association of Medical Equipment Suppliers, PAMES. We're here very briefly to speak about durable medical equipment and the field for specifically 0507. As I think you are aware, in the governor's proposed budget, DME again received a reduction in terms of there were no allowances for an inflationary adjustment. In terms of hard dollars for 0507, total funds are approximately $2.853 million. General fund, that portion in terms of general fund dollars is just $1.095 million. In terms of durable medical equipment, this debate really arose in the fall of 2002. Proposal to reduce reimbursement for the fee-for-service side of durable medical equipment by 20%. That ultimately was restored by the emergency board, I believe, in November of 2002. 2003, we had another debate about durable medical equipment. And really, at the conclusion of the session, at the direction or request of Senator Winters, representatives of the durable medical equipment field sat down earnestly with Representatives OMAP, and I think if you will recall last week, testimony from OMAP indicated a very strong working relationship between the durable medical equipment people and those representatives along with OMAP. But the purpose was to identify areas where OMAP could secure savings. And according to the estimates that I have come across, in 2003-2005, approximately $2.1 million, and I think the target when we started at the conclusion of the 2003 session was about $2.5 million. But the representative from DME helped OMAP secure $2.1 million in savings. So this debate has been ongoing. And the durable medical equipment, I think, as you've heard, ranges from everyday supplies to hard, tangible equipment. So it's a very, very broad field. But again, I think the representatives have made a very strong effort with OMAP, and I think we are now to the point of further reductions in that field will lead to, I think, decreased in the quality of care, and I think you will see an experience restriction in terms of reliable everyday access.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
Brown.
Good morning, Chair Richardson, Elise Brown, representing American Diabetes Association. And what you have in front of you, I thought it was very critical for me to share the medical costs associated with diabetes-related complications. And the complications arise when diabetics don't have access to DME. And for diabetics, the DME means test strips. What you have in front of you is a list of some of those complications, meaning strokes, kidney disease, foot ulcers and amputations, and blindness. And it's important to note that Annual cost associated with blindness is $4 billion a year. Effective management means more effective and less utilization of healthcare dollars. The American Diabetes urges you to again recognize the importance of maintaining DME as part of the Oregon Health Plan benefits for people with diabetes. Providing tools necessary to manage diabetes is a cost-effective health care for not only people with diabetes, but for all Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Question?
Senator.
Yes, Ms. Brown, in your organization, the Diabetes Association, do you have a list of all of the suppliers and their costs? When I asked the OMAP people or DHS people, they didn't, and I was just wondering who actually takes a look at the varying costs among various companies?
Chair Richardson, Senator Monis Anderson, I don't have that information with me today, but I'm happy to get that for you.
Thank you.
I brought up in that same committee that it seems like if we used the slower meters, the ones that take 40 to 50 seconds, instead of the 4-second meters, and because those are not keeping up with the advancements that people can buy if they pay for it, it seems like the cost would be substantially less. And yet, you know, if you're receiving your meters and your test strips from Health Human Services, that you might be willing to wait 40 seconds. And so it just seems like there may be substantial savings by having the second generation instead of the current generation of equipment and blood test strips. Anyway, that information would be very helpful to us. Thank you. We have next Jeannie Hamilton and Tom Holt. And that will conclude our testimony for today.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Hamilton. I work with the Oregon Primary Care Association, and I work with outreach workers that see Oregon Health Plan patients all across the state. And I would like to echo a lot of what has already been said and be brief, but that the framework of the OHP Dental for the OHP Plus population, I urge you to keep intact. Just as a reminder, the OHP Plus is already a very fragile population. It's the federally mandated blind, aged, and disabled. And just reminding you from the OHP standard that was cut a couple of years back, that by cutting that framework, over 93,000 people have now fallen off of the health plan, and you can see that in the uninsurance rate in Oregon, going from about 510,000 to the most recent number, 614,000. And you all have a very hard job, and you're responsible for what is going on with our state, and I think people are looking to you for answers. I don't think FEOP is really the answer for this most fragile population, because FEOP is very much of a middle-class model. And people that are falling off of the Oregon Health Plan, the majority of them are from 0 to 50% of the FPL. To get on FEOP, you have to go through an application for FEOP. Then you have to pick your managed care plan, and people still think there's a waiting list. There's a $500 deductible. There's a 20% responsibility of medical cost, and it's just not a viable option if you really are in crisis and you have a mental illness. So I just also want to touch on the maintenance of effort that you've been hearing about. FEOP is not stated in the language of the maintenance of effort, so I do believe that you may have been given some misinformation. I saw some information yesterday that I was actually astonished to see, and I think that OHP standard could receive that money, and you could really feel good about what you get out of this session if you're able to reinstate OHP standard. 1 in 5 Oregonians have been on the health plan, and they support it. It was a national model. Every state was looking to Oregon, and it would be great to be back on that limelight. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's twice that's been mentioned, so we will certainly look into whether or not the maintenance of effort that is presently attributed to FEOP is absolutely required. Yes, sir.
Chair Richardson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt with the Oregon State Pharmacy Association. Our members are pharmacists and pharmacy technicians. They're frontline providers for the Oregon Health Plan. In many instances in community and long-term care pharmacies, it's not at all unusual for our members to have more than half of the patients they see be on the Oregon Health Plan, so we deal with this intimately every day. Others have spoken about the needs that are out there for those who have already been removed from the plan over the last couple of years. I want to be very brief and talk to you a little bit about stewardship. You know, we don't put people in traction when a splint will do. We don't do major surgery when all you need is a few stitches. But when it comes to prescription drugs, we seem to suspend stewardship in regard to management of the Oregon Health Plan fee-for-service. When I go around to pharmacy conferences around the country, people always mention our evidence-based process of reviewing prescription drugs. And something like 14 or 15 other states use our process to save a great deal of money and provide good care and expand the people are able to cover with prescription drugs, but we don't, because we prohibit the department from using prior authorization in prescription drugs. There are two ways that we can really influence the outcome and the cost of treatment for a patient in prescription drug arena. One is compliance with therapy, following up, following through, making sure that person is getting the treatment they need and following up on it. The other is selection of product, the lowest cost effective product, because more than 90% of the cost in the prescription drug arena is the product itself. So product selection is almost everything. So we would ask you to simply let us, not give us more money, but let us work with the department and with the Health Resources Commission, which runs the evidence-based process, to stretch the dollars a little further. There's an assumption in the governor's recommended budget of $5.1 million in savings, almost enough, for example, to restore the dental benefit that you heard about just a short time ago, by allowing the department to use prior authorization in a sensible way. Prior authorization does not mean denying people care. It means sending a signal through the system that simply asks, are you sure? Are you sure that this patient needs this particular product, or is there another lower cost, effective product that will get the job done? It frustrates our members enormously to see the waste go through the system of using products that we don't need to be using when we could get the job done with something a lot less expensive. Just to give you a high-level number, average cost of a prescription in an Oregon Health Plan, if it's a branded product, and there's lots of really good, effective branded products that we should be using, I want to say that on the record, around $75, $80. For an effective generic product in the same category, you might be looking at $18 to $20. And you're talking quantums of difference on a patient-by-patient basis that really adds up. So we would simply ask that you look at that issue. That requires a bill. No bill has moved through the process in either chamber to fix that, but I would commend that to your attention as you work on this budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that completes the testimony of all those that have signed up. We appreciate all of you coming and participating today. And without objection, we will go ahead and
this meeting. And you get it through the house. That's the same problem.